Welcome to another program of Savoir Faire. My name is Madani Farrugia and I will be your hostess during these programs. This program is being brought to you by the History of Art Department, University of Malta, under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri Bonacci, who is also the Artistic Director of the MDNA Contemporary Art Biennale 2015. The series will be focusing on exploring design and designers. The topics will be extremely varied, from luxurious objects and famous designers to everyday objects. You can also view images of the objects that we will be discussing during the program by accessing a website built specifically for this program. The website is as follows: www.melfarrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. In today's program, we will be discussing a number of miscellaneous and diverse iconic objects from our everyday lives, along with objects of luxury. We will be discussing luxury handbags, we will mention coffee machines, sunglasses, watches, the London Underground map, and Coca-Cola bottles, amongst other objects. For those of you who are following us on our website, I remind you to go to the Programs tab and choose Program 3. We can start with some luxurious designer fashion items. And I would like to start with Louis Vuitton. I invite you to have a look at image number 1. Well, Louis Vuitton, who had never heard of this brand? How did it all begin? I want to start by quoting a famous contemporary fashion designer, Marc Jacobs, who said, "It took me years to work out what was so special about Vuitton, but when you go to the workshops outside Paris and see how everything is crafted, it's pretty impressive." So, it all started with an innovative trunk in the year 1858. Yes, 1858. In 1852, a commission came from Napoleon III, when he asked Louis Vuitton to produce travel boxes for his wife, Empress Eugenie. This commission was a kickstart for Vuitton to start his own luxury box-making and packing workshop in Paris. Interesting to note, the sign outside the shop read, "Securely packs the most fragile objects, specializing in packing fashion." In 1858, an entirely new design of trunk was launched. The major change was in the shape. The conventional travel trunk was round-topped. The new trunk was flat, thus making it convenient to have trunks stacked on top of each other. He also changed the material, where instead of leather, now canvas coated with glue was used, which made the trunk lighter, more durable, and waterproof. How did the famous LV monogram from the name Louis Vuitton that we know today came along? And first of all, what do we mean by a monogram? The monogram is made up of initials superimposed over each other. So in this case, we have the L and the V, and when they are superimposed on each other, well, they created this very famous Louis Vuitton monogram. Image number 2 on the website shows this monogram. In 1867, Vuitton modified his trunk design to deter imitations, and in 1888 he created the damiere, the checkerboard canvas pattern, with the logo Marque L. Vuitton Déposé, or L. Vuitton Registered Trademark, on every trunk. After Vuitton's death in 1892, his son, Georges, continued the momentum with international patents, unique combination locks, and in 1896, the monogram canvas pattern featuring symbols such as the quatrefoil and the LV monogram. Let's move on to another luxurious bag. And in contrast to the Louis Vuitton trunks and bags, where the LV monogram for Louis Vuitton is at times used as a decorative pattern on the bags, we move to another famous bag, which has no brand name displayed on it, but it is recognized just by its design. I am referring to the Birkin bag by Hermès. Image number 3 on the website shows an example of such a bag. Price range of this bag are from $10,000 to $150,000 per bag. And each bag is handcrafted from beginning to end, and the bag takes around 48 hours to be finished. From where did this Birkin bag originate? Perhaps one can call it quite a serendipitous event. In 1981, the actress and singer Jane Birkin was on a flight from Paris to London, and she happened to be seated next to Hermès chief executive Jean-Louis Dumont. Her bag fell from the overhead compartment, scattering all her stuff on the floor. While she was collecting her belongings, Dumont remarked that she should have a leather bag with pockets, to which Birkin replied, "The day that Hermès makes one with pockets, I will have that," and he promised her such a bag. In 1984, 3 years later, he presented her with a black leather bag based on an Hermès design from 1892, and this classic bag was born, which is now symbol of wealth. These bags show the company's signature saddle stitching, and since these bags are individually made, no two bags are the same. They come in various skins, including calf, crocodile, and ostrich, and come in various colors. Aspects that distinguish this bag are the flap that extends from the back over the top, and the wraparound belt that hooks onto the front, and a plate clasp, lock, and key. Just looking at the design of this bag, personally, I don't think I would buy it, even if I could afford it. But the strong message of wealth, luxury, celebrity that it emits, of course, makes you crave to own one. And of course, if I happen to get one for free, I would gladly take it. Well, my birthday was only a couple of weeks ago, and late gifts are very welcome. Another luxurious accessory, and which surely emphasizes a similar statement, but perhaps more for the men this time rather than the women, even though there is also a line for women, is the Rolex watch. For those following on the website, you can have a look at image number 4, which shows the model called Rolex Oyster Perpetual Submariner, which was produced in 1954. Why is Rolex so famous? In 1926, it was the first company who produced the first waterproof watches case. It was named the Oyster, and it guaranteed to remain in good working condition in depths of even 100 meters. 10 years after, Rolex perfected its perpetual movement. What do we mean by perpetual movement? This is a self-winding mechanism that depends on the wrist motion of the wearer. While researching the Rolex watches, I found this comment on the Rolex official website about the interior of the watch. A part which is invisible to the wearer, but for those who are following on the website, you can have a look at image number 5, which shows the heart of this watch. And Rolex give a romantic image of the interior of the watch, and I will be reading it for you. Hidden away in its waterproof case, the perpetual movement remains invisible to the wearer of the watch. Only Rolex certified watchmakers are able to access it with their special tools. Yet, when it has the honor of being seen, this exquisite mechanism, known to the world for its chronometric performance, can truly be admired for what it is, that is, a work of art, a magnificent miniature universe, a myriad of shapes, forms, volumes, colors, and surfaces, some polished, some satin finished, others circular grain, always with loving care. So here we can see that for the creators and designers of the Rolex watches, these are not just watches, nor just perfectly designed objects, but they are considered works of art. To conclude about the Rolex model that we mentioned, that is the Rolex Oyster Perpetual Submariner, was specifically designed for divers. Improved versions of this model nowadays are guaranteed to function at underwater depths of up to 300 meters. Also, to aid to this particular model of Rolex, which is now so famous, was James Bond. In fact, variations of this model can be seen worn by the famous 007 in numerous of his movies. Okay, one more quick quote about this watch, this time by the famous writer Ernest Hemingway, who wrote, "The heart is just a muscle. Only it is the main muscle. It works as perfectly as a Rolex Oyster Perpetual. The trouble is, you cannot send it to the Rolex representative when it goes wrong. When it stops, you just do not know the time. You're dead." Let's move on to another brand of watches and timepieces, the Patek Philippe & Co., which is a Swiss ultra-luxury watch manufacturer. I admit, personally, I was first attracted to this brand thanks to their tagline and advertisements, which says, "You never actually own a Patek Philippe. You merely look after it for the next generation." I find this tagline extremely powerful. The buyer of the watch is not a consumer anymore, but more of a curator in a museum in charge of this unique piece of art. This, of course, makes one wonder how powerful marketing can be, and that a great design might virtually remain unknown unless it is pushed by the right marketing. But perhaps, and hopefully, we will discuss this into more detail in a future program. Let's mention something briefly about Patek Philippe. The company was first called Patek, Chapek and Cies, who produced their first pocket watches in 1939. In 1844, at l'Exposition Nationale des Produits de l'Industrie in Paris, Adrien Philippe was awarded a bronze medal for his pioneering keyless winding and hand-setting system. And here it is where Philippe is noticed by Patek, who invites him to Geneva. And soon after, Anthony Patek and Adrien Philippe merge into the company we know today. Image number 6 on the website shows an image of the first Swiss wristwatch. This wristwatch is made up of quite a large oblong face of the watch, and it's embellished with a number of jewels and other intricate decorations. The final design of this product is certainly elegant and grand. So, in 1868, Patek Philippe creates the first Swiss wristwatch, which was sold to Countess Kozawis of Hungary. The rectangular case houses a baguette movement and is set on a bracelet of yellow gold. It's a very exceptional piece, I must say. Last year, Patek Philippe celebrated their 175th anniversary. And to commemorate this, of course, they launched a commemorative collection, amongst which I would like to mention the limited edition model called the Patek Philippe Grandmaster Chime, which you can have a look at in image 7 on the website. This Grandmaster watch is truly a piece of art. I really can't stop looking at the image of this watch. And I will read you the description by Patek Philippe. "In painstaking development since 2007, the star of Patek Philippe's 175th anniversary is an unparalleled masterpiece, a double-faced reversible wristwatch, majestically finished, containing 20 complications, as its name suggests, with a choir of chimes that have never before come together in any wristwatch. A grand complication reinventing and celebrating the music of time. A new pinnacle in haute horlogerie. This is a watch with an intricate inner life. Only 7 pieces with this unique engraved case will ever be made. 6 will be sold to collectors and enthusiasts. While I'm waiting to receive the 7th one." The last watch that I would like to mention is this watch. A huge contrast from the examples we have just mentioned. This watch was aimed at mass production. Even though it is a very reliable Swiss timepiece, It is made of various materials, including plastic, stainless steel, rubber, and other less expensive materials. It comes in endless colors and designs, and various artists were commissioned to design limited edition models. This watch company was co-founded by entrepreneur Nicolas G. Hayek in 1983. He wanted people to own a watch which was not only a superior Swiss watch with fewer parts than traditional timepieces, but also fun, reliable and inexpensive. Image 8 shows a variety of these Swatch watches. And with all these designs and variations, there is surely something for everyone's taste. Another accessory which I would like to mention are sunglasses. Well, apart from its main function, which is that to protect our eyes from the sun rays. Well, let's face it, we all look cooler with sunglasses on. A case in point is a quote by the famous actor Jack Nicholson, who said, "With my sunglasses on, I'm Jack Nicholson. Without them, I'm fat and 60.
You're overlooking one of the great things about me.
Of course, there are many designer brands of sunglasses, but I chose to mention one of the perhaps most legendary and classic of all. The brand Ray-Ban was not named after the original designers, but for the functioning purpose of the sunglasses, which literally means rays from the sun being blocked. Specifically, I wanted to mention the Ray-Ban Aviator sunglasses, which you can have a look at image number 9. This is the most famous model by Ray-Ban. I'm sure all those of you who watched Top Gun can remember a young Tom Cruise wearing this model of sunglasses, whose girl take my breath away. Let's not lose track. This model has been around with barely any changes since 1937. It was originally created for pilots, as the name implies, as they were experiencing headaches due to long exposure in the sun's glare. These sunglasses were created by Bausch & Lomb, an eye health company, and in 1936 they produced the first example, which had a plastic frame and green lenses, which reduced the glare without obscuring the vision. In 1937, they launched a variation of the product, which now had a metal frame, which encircled the distinctive teardrop-shaped lenses, and pilots from around the world began sporting them. A year later, the Ray-Ban was available to the general public, and since then, these sunglasses are considered a stylish and glamorous eyewear. We are past mid-program now, and I could really use a coffee right now. And what better coffee than one made by the probably most beautiful of all the industrial espresso machines? I am referring to the coffee machine called La Pavoni. For those who are following us on the website, which you can visit by going to www.melfarrugia/wix.com/savoirfaire and choose program number 3, we are now at image number 10. I also remind you that you can access this website also from your mobile phones. This coffee machine, well, I personally think it is really beautiful. Made in Italy by designer Gio Ponti in collaboration with designers Antonio Fornaroli and Alberto Rosselli. It is made of sleek and shiny chrome, curvaceous and stylish. It was called La Cornuta, which means the horn, after its shape, and later on it was also called the Chrome Peacock for its resplendent appearance. Apart from its magnificent design, this was the first espresso machine with a horizontal boiler for smoother coffee. This coffee machine helped in disseminating the 1950s fashion of drinking Italian-style coffee in bars and cafes. worth of mentioning, Gio Ponti was an architect, and apart from designing this iconic coffee machine, he was also commissioned to design Milan's second skyscraper in 1956, which was called the Pirelli Tower, commissioned, of course, as the name implies, by the Pirelli company that manufactures tires. The Pirelli Tower can be seen in image 11. Now I would like to mention an object which perhaps one would not expect to have it discussed in such a program. I will be discussing the design of the London Underground map. The map as we know it today was introduced in 1933, and you can see an image of this by looking at image number 12 on the website. What is so different about this map? Well, first of all, it is extremely clear, almost stylized, I would say. It is designed on a grid, uses color coding, and really resembles an electronic circuit diagram, and has no geographical accuracy whatsoever. Such a modern map reflected the modern efficient image of the London Underground Tube. Before this map was designed, the original map, which was designed in 1908, and that you can see in image number 13, shows quite a confusing spaghetti-like image, and it portrayed all the color-coded routes and the streets above, and it was also to scale. After various attempts to simplify this map, in 1933, a certain engineering draftsman at the London Underground Signals office, called Harry Beck, in his spare time at work, he created a color-coded diagram showing how to move from station to station. He straightened the lines and evened the distances between the stations. This was clearly influenced by his background of circuit designing. The design has become so widely known that it is now instantly recognizable as representing London. It has been featured on t-shirts, postcards, and other memorabilia. Interesting to add is that this map is also being used to showcase art. In fact, each edition of the Tube map cover offers a unique artwork to customers traveling by tube. The small-scale, yet monumental commission, now in its 10th year, places the best international art into the hands of millions of travelers. For those of you who wish to view these artworks, you can visit the following website, www.art.tfl.gov.uk. The next iconic object that everyone has seen for sure is the Coca-Cola bottle. The bottle resulted from a competition and from misunderstandings. And now I will explain why. In 1915, the Coca-Cola company wanted a design for a bottle for their product. They requested a distinctive bottle that it should be recognizable even in the dark. So they launched a competition for the best design.
Round one.
The designer Earl Ardeane from the Root Glass Company thought that the word coca was referring to cocoa. So what he did is he based his bottle design on the shape of a cocoa pod, which he copied from an encyclopedia. You can have a look at this first design by checking image number 14 on our website. Although the shape was quite stylish, however, it was not very functional, since the middle part of the bottle was much wider than the base, and this made the bottles very unstable on the conveyor belt.
Round two.
So Earl Dean modified the design by narrowing the middle bulge and widening the base a bit. The final design resembled the contours of a fashionably dressed woman of the time. Another thing which made the Coca-Cola bottle recognizable was the embossed lettering. To conclude today's program, I would like to include two pieces of furniture. The first piece of furniture is something that is not commonly found in Malta. I am referring to skyscraper furniture. In Image 15 shows an example from 1927 by architect Paul T. Frankel. Skyscraper furniture, as the name clearly implies, are pieces of furniture like cupboards, bookcases that resemble skyscrapers, with their boxy lower sections and elongated upper parts. When Frankel moved to the United States, he was immediately captured by the Manhattan skyline, and he designed a personal bookcase imitating this skyline. His neighbors and friends immediately liked the design, and eventually he opened a shop selling this kind of inspired furniture. By breaking with the constraints of the past, this towering architectural form expressed the excitement and optimism of a new era, an era of freedom felt by the many after World War I, and also helped in shaping American modernism. Quoting Paul T. Frankel, he said, "Our progress does not depend on fighting for modernism, but on educating ourselves to be part of the world we live in." The last object for today, I find it quite fun and decorative. It is called the Bookworm Bookshelf, designed between 1993 and 1995 by architect Ron Arad. And what is great about this bookshelf is that the consumer can have a say at how it looks like, since the shape of the shelf can be altered to one's liking. On the website you can have a look at this shelf by going to the very bottom of the images of program 3, image number 16. The form of this shelf looks literally like a huge meandering worm. It is made up of long, thin, flat pieces of plastic with 11 movable brackets, which can be adjusted and fit in different places by appropriate screws, and creates different looks of the shelf each time. When the shelf was unveiled at the Milan Furniture Fair in 1993, it was made of sprung steel. However, soon after, it started being mass-produced by Italian manufacturer Cartel. They produced it in injection-molded PVC, and nowadays it is one of Arad's best-selling works. That was all for today, and I urge you to join us next week for another interesting program. And I remind you that this program is being brought to you by the History of Art Department, University of Malta, under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri Bonacci, who is also the Artistic Director for the Mlina Biennale 2015. These programs will be available as webcasts on Campus FM website, which is maltauniversitybroadcasting.com. Next week we will be discussing handmade shoes and shoes for the stars. See you next week.